Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded the 6th day of August, 2010.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Russia says it will ban the export of wheat and other grains starting in mid-August. The markets rallied, and then they fell back. What does it mean to the fundamental picture? We'll ask this and many more questions today on Commodity Week.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Craig Parr of the Andersons in Maumee, Ohio. Our panelists in studio today include Ellen Dearden of AgReview out of Morton, Illinois, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois.
Support comes from Taylor & Martin Auctions, which is holding an auction of over 100 pieces of large late-model ag equipment from John Deere, Case, and Cat on Tuesday, August 10th at 10 a.m. at Progress City in Decatur, Illinois. Online bidding is available at tmilive.com.
Let's open today's discussion with this question. Next year's July wheat contract finished the week 7.25 cents lower at 703. Still, that's way above the 540 low put in the weekend of June the 7th. How much of next year's crop, Dan Zwicker, would you dare to market at these levels?
Well, I think a farmer ought to take advantage of $7 type wheat. I mean, there's reason to believe technically that depending upon what the situation is in Soviet Union or former Soviet Union, that maybe there's more up in the wheat. But I think looking at this 6.75 to 7.25 cash price that was being offered here over the past week, looks pretty attractive to me for the long pull.
Bill Mayer? Bill Mayer?
I think that I would be somewhere in that 35 to 50% range, I guess, at these levels. Probably a more important question is how you sell it. We're seeing some very wide variation as far as basis levels and what a person can actually get out there for cash wheat for next year. And also the seed availability we're finding in some areas at least is starting to tighten up or unavailable. So I guess two things. One is if you're going to sell it, make sure you've got the seed to plant it. And number two, if you're going to plant it, make sure that you have at least some of it sold, I think.
And Ellen Dearden.
We've got live recommendations right now at 25% with hedges or hedge-derived contracts. I'm a little bit concerned about seed availability as well.
So did any of you find it curious that Glencore asked the Russian government to block the export of grains in order to protect its bottom line this past week? This was reported by Reuters on the 3rd day of August. That was Wednesday. Glencore's chief executive officer was quoted in the story saying it needed to be done in order, quote, not to put the companies like us, international and Russian exporters, in a bad position because otherwise, we'll be in trouble in executing our contracts. The second part of that story outlined when the ban should be lifted, 4 to 6 weeks after the implementation, sometime then, therefore, in October, which is what we've been hearing in the latter part of the week. Pretty nice to be able to do that and have Vladimir Putin follow through, I think.
Well, I think it's somewhat similar to what happened back in 1973 when the dairy producers in New England went down to Richard Nixon and told them that unless they put a ban on soybeans, they were going to have to liquidate their dairy herd. So everybody has a hidden agenda when they ask those kind of things. So who knows what the real story is? But my my guess is that somebody had a bad position and was wanting a way to get out of that position. And once they get things squared away, then things will change again.
So 4 to 6 weeks, you think, long enough for them to get out of that position?
My guess is, or my experiences with bad positions, they just get worse. you can give everybody a breather and give them hope, but it's kind of like, you know, when your broker calls you up for margin money, the market consolidates for a day or two, and you think, oh, I think I'm going to maybe get through this, and then all of a sudden it goes limit up again. It'll be interesting how it plays out. My guess is the wheat market is not done.
All right, so this ban in place, beginning the 15th of August, it'll come off sometime, maybe October 1, October 15th, something along those lines. Just a couple of other notes. Last year, Russia exported 18.3 million metric tons of wheat, third only to the U.S. and the EU in the export market. Will there be opportunities for the United States to export wheat?
Yes, I think so. I think there's ample wheat here to export, and I think it'll be a good opportunity for us too. As far as the decision to ban the exports, I'm not sure how well thought out that was, and I think there's emotional decisions made when you have markets doing like they're doing, how much consideration was given to maintaining their respect as far as their sellers and that part of it goes. I think it's almost more of a feed grain issue than it is a wheat issue, as far as I can see, as far as the U.S. gaining exports.
You know, the U.S. has plenty of hard red winter wheat to export. It's certainly in a good position in the western part of Kansas and hasn't moved, but it's a better quality than the wheat from Russia. So we'd be looking at the U.S. wanting to see a premium paid to what Russia is willing to accept.
Okay, so one other thing. Russia looks like it's down maybe 25%, do you think? Most of you, is that about right? So 46.5 million metric tons. Last year they were at 61.7 million metric tons. I guess really the bottom line is this a regional issue on the planet, or is it a global issue?
It's a global issue from the standpoint that when we look at Russia and, well, particularly Russia, we're looking at a feed quality wheat. So we've got that part of the mix. But that whole region, that Black Sea region's down, but Russia is really the target for the center of that.
All right. Let's move on to the survey of the report's coming out next week. There are some numbers out, Allendale, Informa, FC Stone, maybe some others. For corn next week on the report comes out on Thursday. This is the WASI and the crop production report. Allendale at a 13.524 billion bushel crop. Informa at 13.4. FC Stone at 13.43. That's from the top to the bottom. Allendale's at 167. Informa at 166. And FC Stone at 165.8. USDA at 163.5 the last time around. Are those numbers right, wrong, too high, too low?
Well, if USDA comes out with the numbers close to what these private guys are coming at, I think they'll be the highest of the year, and we'll go down from there. Just a complete opposite of last year. Last year they were on the low side, and they kept raising it as we went up. So I think USDA, who knows what they'll do on it. I mean, there is no secret the population count's high, and you multiply that by average year weights and all this kind of business, you could come up with big years. So, I mean, I look at those average estimates and it says what's going to be bearish in next week's report.
Do you do the same thing?
Yeah, I guess I agree totally with what Dan said as far as that's typically their protocol on the August report is population times an average year weight. I haven't really ran into a lot of areas where the population's a problem other than the holes that are out in the field, and that'll come off harvested acres probably. So I guess I could see a number coming out similar to these estimates. Neutral, I don't know that I see it being on the bearish side.
I think we need to keep in mind, too, that abandoned acres will not be reflected in this report, so the yield may come in pretty darn high.
All right, here are some of the numbers as they finished up in Chicago. We'll start with the wheat pit. September had a high for the week at $8.41, the low at $6.57. That September contract at $7.25¾ was up, $0.64¼. We already gave you the July. It was down $7¼ at $7.03. The low, by the way, there was at $5.40 the week of June the 7th. Corn pit, September contract at $4.25¼ top, low at $3.85. And September settled 12¼ cents higher this week at $4.05. December corn at $4.20, up 13¼. The recent low on the 28th day of June, or the week of that, at $3.43¼. And the soybeans, August contract at $10.80 top, bottom at $10.37. Settlement price up 6¼ cents at $10.59 week over week. November beans at $10.33½. They gained 28½ cents, and they had their recent low on the week of June the 7th at $8.86¾. And so everything has rallied fairly sharply since that point. Do you think there's much left in the marketplace in prior to harvest, I suppose?
Speaking as a technician, the trend is higher. You buy the breaks. This thing has been totally counter-seasonal all year. It went down when it was supposed to go up through the spring months, and now it's going up when it's supposed to be going down, and that trend is in place. And until something comes along to change that trend, she's counter-seasonal, and counter-seasonal trends have a lot of power.
You agree?
Yeah, I agree with that, but I guess I look at it as from the timing stand of it, since it is counter-seasonal. Counter-seasonal, I think that from a marketing standpoint, that makes it tough because you're coming into a period here where, in a lot of cases, farmers have a set limit of time that they're coming up against it. They're either going to have to pay a hefty amount of storage or get sales made. So I think you have to market in that environment, and the emotion that we've seen in the market this week really test one's ability to stay focused and disciplined from a marketing standpoint. And I think you just continue to take advantage of the opportunities. If you need to come in and defend positions that you've already got on, you use down moves to do that, and use all the tools that are available out there.
What tools do you like for corn and for beans?
Well, we're pretty heavily hedged on both the corn and the beans that have come back with some long call positions. And I'm not buying a lot of time for these long calls either, which puts them in a little bit better price standpoint. The premium's not so large. I think it's a real tip-off, though, that the wheat was a limit-up situation, limit-down during the session on Friday, and I think we're still seeing a flow of money into these grains. But if that quits in the wheat and the positions get kind of squared between the wheat-corn spreaders, the corn-wheat spreaders, I think this whole thing could unravel pretty easily. So I'm kind of on the defense with just coming back with the long calls.
How about on the soy complex?
Kind of the same deal there. I didn't think the beans looked like they had the legs this week. The bean oil, to me, is the tip-off. If the bean oil falls apart, I'm going to be very active in adding to short positions.
You think that the carryover is just going to weigh heavily on that marketplace?
I don't know. You know, the fundamentals have been kind of out the window lately. All we've got to do is look at the money flow.
We heard earlier in the week from one of our cash grain folks that beans came out. They actually had more beans in storage, the farmers did, than they thought. Did you see that in Decatur?
There's plenty of beans to finish out the marketing year. I mean, I think that's been pretty well on the table for some time. I think you look at export sales. I think you see that there continues to be pretty good demand for beans, and that's the kind of the driving force that's kind of holding the soybean market together is demand.
So what do we do then at this point? What's your plan of action for new crop corn and beans?
I think that you on your soybeans at this point, I think you have to have a pretty good 50% or so sold. You know, when you're looking at $10 cash beans in a lot of areas this week that you could get, I think you have to be realistic about what your yields are. And in a lot of cases, we're finding out that people are getting very concerned about yields in some areas. I think that you do that. I think that you On the other part of it that's not sold, maybe you try to get some put options on or something. They're a little bit expensive right now, but I don't have a big problem just kind of waiting on the balance of the sales.
Dan, in your technical work, where are your upside potential numbers for corn and beans?
Oh, I'm not too sure you want to hear those, do you?
I do want to hear them. I bet everybody else does, too.
Well, November beans did what they needed to do. Is they punched out the January high. We're new highs for the year. Tonight's close is probably the highest close we've had since maybe January 4th or whatever. So I think the trend is well established. I think the next point that everybody's going to be looking at is somewhere around this 1065 to 1075. And I would not rule out a complete 50% retracement back toward the 2008 high, and I think that comes in there around $13.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Our guests in studio include Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing, and Alan Dearden of Ag Review. When we return, we'll talk with Craig Parr of the Andersons in Maumee, Ohio.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. We have not been able to get a long-term break from the heat and humidity here in Illinois, and it appears it will be a while before we do. Fortunately, we have had at least some short-term breaks in the heat and humidity. Weak cold fronts have dropped through Illinois, taking the edge off both the heat and the high dew points, if only for a couple of days. The latest of these cold fronts slowly moved through the state Wednesday night and Thursday. High temperatures on Wednesday were brutal in southern Illinois and along the Ohio River, with Carbondale reaching 104 degrees. Relief came on Thursday as temperatures only reached 90 in southern Illinois. Precipitation was heavy in the northern third of the state this week as a result of thunderstorms developing along the then-stalled front. Southern Illinois picked up significant rain on Wednesday night and Thursday as the last of the storms moved through with the cold front. Rainfall was spotty in central Illinois with only about 1/4 to 1/3 of an inch. After a seasonable and not as humid weekend, the heat and humidity will begin its return on Monday. Temperatures will likely get well into the 90s across southern Illinois and in the low 90s in central portions of the state. However, thunderstorms and associated clouds could help keep temperatures down as a series of weak upper-level disturbances move through Illinois during the week. There are indications that a more long-term break in the heat and humidity could begin setting up by next weekend. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support comes from Taylor & Martin Auctions, which is holding an auction of over 100 pieces of large, late-model ag equipment from John Deere, Case, and Cat on Tuesday, August 10th at 10 a.m. at Progress City in Decatur, Illinois. Online bidding is available at tmilive.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on the 6th day of August, 2010. I'm Todd Gleason from University of Illinois Extension. Our panelists in studio today include Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing, Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group, and Ellen Dearden of Ag Review. On the phone line with us as our guest is Craig Parr of the Andersons in Maumee, Ohio. Hi, Craig. How are you today?
Hi, Todd. I'm doing great.
What did you make of the wheat market and what's been happening in Russia?
Well, a lot of things, of course, with any time that you see that the big run-up in wheat prices like we've seen, we've got a drastic change, and that change started quite some time ago. And I think we can trace it back to some sizable positions that people got caught short in, and you know the rest of the story when you add on, maybe pile on the situation in Russia. But with high prices does bring opportunity, and I think your panelists did a very nice job talking about how you approach a very volatile market. And I think there's some opportunity for farmers who are looking at not only this year's crop, but also looking at next year.
Yeah, Craig, this is Dan here. Trying to sort through the former Soviet Union decline in wheat, how do you think that's impacting the balance sheets of corn and wheat for the coming year?
Sure. Well, I think the Russian ban itself should probably take somewhere in the neighborhood of about 500, maybe 550 million bushels or 15 million metric tons. could be the impact of the world table. If that does all flow back to the U.S., we would know that the U.S. Supply and demand table, specific to carryout, could be cut almost in half. And that's why you're seeing the drastic price run-ups. I think your question is really important as it relates to corn. And, you know, we're in a situation here where we've got the bad news in wheat, and now we're dragging corn along, and I think we've got a situation here that looking next year, we're going to have an impact to planted acres. We're going to have an uptick this year in soft red wheat acres. We will have an impact negatively in this area, probably in corn, and we need probably just as much corn as we can this coming next year.
So I think what you're saying there, if I'm following you, Craig, is that prices need to do the job of pulling more acres in, but also probably cutting back some on the demand side of it. What kind of price levels do we see the ethanol side of the business start to react or cut back?
Yeah, that's interesting because we've kind of been on that bubble with the ethanol. We've had decent margins for a while. Most of it was in the spot market, and then the deferred markets didn't offer much opportunity. And then, I don't know, 3-4 months ago, there was opportunity in, even into Q1 and Q2 of next year. What's interesting is most of the good margins have really been spot, and occasionally you see the opportunities out in the deferred. We've actually thought about the overall ethanol demand coming out through the balance of this year and looking at it. I think the USDA has got us at like $4.7 billion. We would argue it could be a 4.8 or even a 4.9 billion ethanol demand number. We could also argue that exports are up 100 million. Now we're sitting in a situation where we're pushing, a billion carryout. So we got a tight situation that could come up.
There's an awful lot of talk in the Western Corn Belt of record number of corn plantings for next year. And I know that the seed company folks are really out there beating the bushes, talking about their great new hybrids. You really believe that we're not going to see a lot of corn acreage in the U.S. for next year?
Well, I should say there's going to be some competing acres. The soft red wheat will compete for it. We'll have 9 million or so acres that are planted to soft red this year over in our area coming up. We'll compete a little bit. I guess my intent was that in this area we'll compete with it. The price will have to do some work as we look at wheat prices in the deferred this year and next. That'll get as many acres as you possibly can. And I think one of the panelists indicated corn prices will have to do the work to at least stay stable to maintain the acreage.
Given the choice on the acres that you might go to wheat, would you go to wheat?
There's a bean-wheat rotation. There's obviously decisions to go to wheat versus corn. Today, from an economic standpoint, given today's prices, you could say that wheat has a very good return, certainly as it compares to beans, and one could argue in comparison to corn. Today, I would lean towards wheat.
When one looks at that, you really got to look at the cash side of it, because if you just look at the futures, there's a difference there because the basis is still relatively wide out there for the 2011 wheat.
Absolutely.
Well, it just looks to me, I mean, farmers, if they were watching this week's market and they had their numbers in their head, farmers were offered $7 cash wheat out of the field for next summer. They were also offered in the $10 range of soybeans. And, I mean, that looks to me like some pretty good gross numbers for wheat bean acres in the lower third of the Midwest.
Yeah, I can't argue with it. I mean, one of the things that I talk about regionally is that we have a pretty good production history with soft red. And if you're looking at this year, one of the things that the market needs to do and has needed to do for a while is specifically as we had this divergence between cash and futures prices in wheat, the price needed to get to a point to discourage wheat plantings. And so far, year over year, we've had decent wheat plantings, we've had ample production, we've had situations where we could next year find where we've have enough soft red wheat and carryovers from the year before that there might not be a place to put it. And I think that one of the panelists was suggesting you do have to be cautious about where basis is. The economic standpoint, maybe I'm not as close as some of the panelists in terms of the returns to per acre, but I can tell you, at least in this area, there'll be a pretty high competition between certainly both wheat and beans and potentially corn.
Do you think we'll come up short corn acres next year?
Yeah, I mean, I think USDA has plugged in somewhere around, for the 10-11 crop, somewhere around 87 or 88 million acres. You know, I guess it's really a roll of the dice, and one could argue maybe it's as low as 86 million acres, and then you do the math from there, 86 million, and you can use trend to get your carryout.
It appears to me that one of the big issues that you're talking about is that the regional differences in Western Corn Belt, Eastern Corn Belt, Southern Corn Belt, Northern Corn Belt may be accentuated next year because wheat's back in the mix.
I think that's a pretty good analysis.
What do you see for the August 12th report?
You know, I think there's a couple things. We're sitting on a situation to where we have what had a great start to a crop year. I think beans look great. I think corn has been impacted. The report that comes out, I can't remember which panelist mentioned it, it's probably not going to be anything that's going to be bearish. The question is, if we're 50 cents higher by the time we get the report on the 12th, we could see a negative impact. I think it is slightly supportive. You know, I got to be cautious with the fact that we've got a 430 nearby Dease corn price at one point this week. I'm in a position to say that you're really have an opportunity for prices in 2011, and this year you got to look at what your program is for a short window and short pricing opportunity.
So what would, on the corn yield, let's just look at that, what would you think would the number have to be corn yield to be a bullish surprise?
Well, we can paint a number of a 163 and get down to a 950 million carryout. Given our numbers, that's increasing ethanol, increasing exports, and doing a couple things with domestic demand. So you don't even have to shave it that far to actually get to a point where you could be pretty friendly. You know, some would say 161, 159, that's certainly bullish.
Only using a 100 million bushel increase in exports, isn't that on the conservative side?
Yeah, I would say it is on the conservative side. Some would argue it's 200, maybe even pushing 250.
Yeah, that's, you know, if you use 2.25, 250, another 100 in ethanol, that makes that balance sheet extremely tight.
Yeah, and we could argue for something closer to a $4.9 billion on ethanol, which would be $200 million higher than what the Gov's got.
Are we using E12 or E15 for ethanol? Or E10?
Yeah, well, although, you know, there has been a lot of talk about the E20, there's also the, you know, the E85, which has actually taken a slight dip in terms of interest, but the E85 has been a pretty decent market for us. You know, personally as a company, it's been attractive because there has been some appeal for blending and certainly for the demander at E85. When you take it all inclusively, that's what we're talking about.
Thank you much for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Craig Parr is with the Andersons out of Maumee, Ohio. Now a final word from our panelist in studio, Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group.
Market has shown its volatility this past week, but I think the underlying demand fundamentals are much stronger than a lot of people think, and I think it's going to be well supported on price breaks.
Bill Mayer?
I'll just repeat what I said earlier. It's an emotional market. Your job is to stay focused as a marketer. Use the tools that are available and try to keep yourself in a defensive mode.
Alan Dearden.
I think you got to follow the money. That's going to be the very important factor here because what flowed in's got to flow out at some point in time, too.
You've been listening to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Our thanks to our panelists in studio and to our guest. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a very good week.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.